Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Geek Town Radio. It's episode 164. I'm your host Dave and I have with me Bex.
Hey, how you doing today?
I'm all right. How are you?
Warm. That's yes. Not a complaint, it's just a factual statement.
Yes, it is warm at the moment and it looks like it's going to carry on staying being warm, which is good. I could do with a little bit of break from the heat, but
No, it's much cheaper than going abroad. I had someone I know who's an indie games reviewer called Jupiter Hadley, and she said she came back from Spain and it was warmer here, and I felt like, yes, I've saved a lot of money by not going on holiday.
Yes, well, I'm not going to America this year, as I do every few years. I'm not going to America this year, and we're basically around about the temperatures that you usually get in LA at this time of year, so I'm quite happy.
Yeah, this is good, you know. Yeah, recession-based holiday. Wait for unnatural heat wave to hit country you're in. Put a few different flags up around the house. Pretend you're somewhere else.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you just need. We don't have the pools outside that you kind of need. You need maybe a paddling pool.
Yeah, paddling pool's pretty good.
So, as we've started the podcast being very British and talking about the weather, what else have you been doing?
Quite a few things, actually. I'm still editing through all of my indie comic and indie game interviews from MCM and EGX, so that's ongoing joy. But there's so many and so many good games I got to play and comics I got to read. I put the one up for Samurai Slasher the other day, which is a rather good comic based on 80s and 90s slasher films.
Awesome.
But with a samurai doing it, and with a 3D section in the middle.
Yes, I saw that. That looked really cool.
It is really, really cool. And the guy who writes it, Mike, he hates cameras. And I've basically forced him to do 2 interviews with me because I really, really want everyone to read his comics. And it's quite funny. You know, you can just see that he does very well, actually, for someone that hates cameras. But partly, despite the fact I'm helping him, you can sort of see he hates me slightly. It's this subtle undertone in the video. You can just about spot that he kind of hates me for the fact I put a camera in his face.
He did very well. He did very well on the cover, I thought.
He did. I thought he did incredibly well. But he was utterly hating it at the same time.
Very good.
I've just been attacked by a kitten.
Yes, if you hear Bex scream throughout this podcast, it's because she's at a friend's house and they have a small kitten and it keeps attacking her.
Well, at the moment, it's trying to eat my headphones.
Now you're free from your kitten attack. What else?
I finished watching Happy on Netflix.
Ah, yes.
Seriously good. Very much enjoyed that. I recommend anyone who doesn't mind too much weirdness and ultra-violence with their comedy to check that one out. I've just been running around telling everyone to watch that, basically.
Yes.
Without any context or warning as to the content. Because why not? What else are we going on? Oh, I was working on a TV show recently.
That's probably fairly relevant. Yes, I saw that. What was the show you were working on?
Do you remember, as you will, because, you know, we're old, yeah. Digitizer, back on teletext?
Yes, I do.
They came back, so Mr. Biffle and Biffo and Paul Gannon came back and they said, do people want more Digitizer? We'll do it as a TV show. And they kickstarted it. And apparently everyone did.
Cool.
So, yeah, they made a panel show format retro games comedy show, which is Digitizer the show.
Yeah.
And I got to go spend a few days helping out with a bit of camera work and just learning about everything and got to meet everyone. And it was awesome because it's the two original original guys from Digitizer on Teletext, plus they've brought in various other guests from like YouTubers and people that do retro game stuff and things as guests. And that was a really great experience and very, very funny.
Yeah.
Very surreal at times, very, very funny. And yeah, I learned an absolute load of new things about how, you know, proper TV shows are put together. And that it was an experience. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing what actually makes the cut and what of the funny things I saw are basically never going to make it.
So do you know where that's going out?
I'm not 100% sure, really. I should really know that. let me Google that. I think it's going up online.
Right, okay.
But I'm hoping very much that if it has a good response, then somebody might actually pick it up and put it on, you know, an actual channel and things. Because the production values were high enough to be a broadcast TV show.
Well, yeah.
I don't know is the answer to that. I should have researched this before coming on here. But if you search for Digitizer the Show, you will find out this information. It will be somewhere. And oh, they're definitely doing a DVD and things I can see on the rewards. So
oh, cool.
You will be able to watch it in one format or another. But yeah, it was great fun. They're all such nice guys. And I got to meet various other YouTubers and people because I don't often get to chat to other YouTubers.
Right.
I'm too busy making the stuff to actually do the whole super important networking that's basically as important as making the stuff.
Yes.
I tend to just concentrate on the doing the stuff aspect. And it was lovely to talk to them, and because they had Larry Bundy Jr., they had Gameplay Jenny, and they had Octavius Kitten was there on one of the days I was there as well.
Right.
Yeah, they're all very funny guys. And seriously, I recommend if you haven't heard about this happening, or you know, even if you don't remember Digitizer and you're not quite as old as me and you weren't on Teletext, then I still recommend looking this up if you like very, very very silly panel show based retro gaming nonsense. Definitely.
Awesome.
What else have I been up to? I'm very much looking forward to Hyper Japan.
Oh, yes. Yes, I know that's coming up.
My beloved Lady Beard.
Yes.
The incredible Australian pro wrestler, martial artist, stuntman, heavy metal singer.
Yes.
He's going to be performing with his new band, Deadlift Lolita, which is another pro wrestler, and they both wear matching pretty maid's dresses and sing death metal.
Awesome.
So I need to see that. That's worth the entry price alone for me to see that.
Yes.
But there's loads of amazing people there if you're into any of the Japanese films, Japanese animated stuff, and as well as the sort of the anime and the manga and all that kind of stuff. They also sometimes have technology guests. One of the previous years, they had a guy who creates these incredible prosthetic limbs and limbs for use on space stations, remote controlled ones, and they did an incredible speech on that. So it's more than just the music and the kind of shopping and socializing stuff. There's actually some really awesome Japanese guests in general. Then it's going to be London Film and Comic Con. Are you heading to that one?
No, I'm doing MCM Manchester that weekend because I sort of assumed that you would probably be going down to do Film and Comic Con anyway. So
yeah, I will try and interview a lot more of the indie comic people. I've been they said after the last one they were going to have a larger indie comic section this time around.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to that, and I've set up a few possible interviews already with people.
Cool.
So that should be good. And obviously proximity wins. I can get the train there.
Yes, exactly. That's the other thing, is it's a lot more expensive for me to go down and do those. So.
Yes, and equally a lot more expensive for me to come up north and do those.
Exactly.
So we divide and conquer in a way that helps both our bank balances. So I think that works.
I think that's probably the best way to do it. So for me this week, I went out and saw some actual live stand-up this week. It's the Litchfield Festival, which is fairly local to me, and they do various musical events and stuff over the festival, but they also have a couple of stand-up comedians coming. I'm going to see Mark Steele next week. Tom Allen was the one that was on this week, who is he's been on various panel shows. You'll know him from that. Really hilarious, and well worth going to see his stand-up. If you've never seen Tom Allen live, go and watch it, because he does some amazing stories. It's very funny. And we were there while the Russia-Croatia matches playing, so that was coming up quite a lot because he could spot people on their phone and he was picking them out of the audience. It's like going, you're watching the match, aren't you? So there was that. Luke Cage season 2 I've been watching as well. I've now finished that. I really enjoyed the second season of that. I think it's probably one of the best second seasons, if not the best second season that they've had of those Marvel shows on Netflix. Just well thought through, good characters, really good villain, thoroughly entertaining. If you've not caught that yet, it's well worth going to watch.
Yeah, I'll add it to the list.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
I've been watching some of them Black Lightning.
Oh, yes.
Just sort of dipping in and out of that, but I've not given it enough episodes to make a fully formed opinion on it quite yet. A little bit different to the other CW-based stuff, but has potential. He seems to stand around on top of buildings, kind of looking at things with his chest lit up and no one notices he's there. Yeah. Other than that.
Yeah, it's not exactly subtle, that outfit in Black Lightning, no.
And it's not exactly very face covering either.
No.
People don't recognise him. But I mean, you know, there's a certain sense of a suspended disbelief, I guess, that I need to up mine slightly.
Yes, absolutely. So watching that, Preacher came back as well. I've watched the first episode of that. I struggled a little bit to get into it. And I think it was more me not being in the right frame of mind for it at the time. But I do like that show. I really like that show. And I'm looking forward to watching the rest of it. Humans, of course, finished last week as well. Are you up to date on Humans?
I am also not up to date on Humans. I feel like I'm completely letting you down. These are all the things I normally would have watched the second they were released.
Yes.
So yeah, no, I am slightly behind on that one as well, but I am thoroughly enjoying it so far.
Yes. So we can't really talk about the finale because somebody hasn't done their homework. So
well, somebody's been outside. Sorry. If this was winter, there'd be no problem right now.
So outside enjoying the sunshine instead of being watching TV. What sort of reviewer do you call yourself?
One that needs vitamin D from the sunshine, you know, just for a month of the year.
Yes. So we're not going to talk about the finale then, but I thoroughly enjoyed this series. It leaves it in a very interesting place. It introduces some heart-wrenching moments towards the end, leaves the characters in very interesting positions, introduces some faces which are really intriguing towards the end as well. I really enjoy this. I love the fact that this show's never really stood still. You never feel like they're going over old ground. It always feels like it's moving forward and it's developing.
The second season I felt like it was slowing down, and then with this one they just jumped it forward, jumped into a load of different dynamics, introduced loads of more characters, and they really kind of picked up the pace again. I was slightly worried after the end of season two that season three might be the same sort of speed and might not move very quickly, but they had addressed that utterly with that first episode. They were just like, and here you go, bang.
Yeah.
And it carried on from there, really. They've definitely been broadening the dynamics. They've been looking at the wider picture of the world. They've been bringing in lots of very genuine concerns, and they've clearly thought a lot about how all of these things would actually impact the world, and incredible amount of thought and detail been put into it. So I'm enjoying it, and I do need to watch that last episode.
Yes, you do, definitely. Interestingly, actually, I've also been playing Detroit Becoming Human, which is the video game, which is sort of covering the same kind of area, really, because it's an Android uprising, essentially. So it's covering quite a lot of the same sort of ground. And it's interesting, there are definitely similarities between the two. Fabulous, fabulous game if you've not played it. I think it's the same people that did Heavy Rain and those other games, which are essentially interactive movies. You follow the stories of three particular characters, and you're controlling their actions, and it is quite possible for you to lose the characters at various points in the story, and they will, you know, disappear or be killed off, or, you know, there are certain points where you can completely lose that character and the story continues without them. It's quite a fascinating game to play through, and has quite a lot of replayability because you get these maps of the story trees, and you can see all the boxes that are grayed out of bits of story which you haven't seen yet, which is really tempting to make you go back and go, oh well, I can go back and replay this and see what happens if I do this or do that. So
the games that these guys make are very emotional and very deep, and I've got a friend who actually was Twitch streaming playing the game and did so with their last one as well, and said that they were so invested in the characters and so invested in the way the story had gone that they actually didn't want to replay it,
right,
because they felt like they couldn't necessarily kind of emotionally handle it, almost, because it was such a well thought out story, and they felt that it was, they'd experienced it and they didn't want to play it again, so they kind of went the other way because of how good it was. But the idea it has got this massive replayability and you can end up somewhere completely different is something that I really kind of miss about games, because you used to have it with really old RPGs back in the day. I'm thinking things like Phantasy Star 3, where you could end up at the end of the game having played a completely different route with a completely different set of characters and a completely different ending, and you could play the game game again and feel like it was a completely different narrative. And it's nice to see things like that coming back into gaming a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. This company in particular are working very hard on those sort of things. So I'm going to go back and play it a bit more, see what sort of different story I can get out, because I was definitely not happy with the way it ended on my story. So I want to go back and redo some bits of it, and I'll see how that goes. Back on the TV side, This Is Us finally came back, which is a show that I absolutely loved. I mean, it's completely non-genre really, but it's just wonderfully well put together, and really thoroughly enjoy that. It's moved channels from Channel 4 to More 4, and we've been waiting for it for ages, but I'm very, very happy that that's back, so I've been really enjoying that. SWAT, which is the new TV show which has come onto Sky One, that's basically their sort of replacement for Hawaii Five-O. It's filling that Sunday night Hawaii Five-O slot. It's a CBS show. It's about a SWAT team. It's pretty much...
It doesn't need any more explanation.
It's almost exactly what you're imagining it is. Yeah. It's fine. It's fine for those sort of procedural, TV
shows.
It's
one of those things where if you like that kind of thing, especially if it's one of those shows you stick on when you're eating your dinner, you'll love that kind of thing. Or if you're me, you'll just sit there and be like, I want 45 minutes of my life back. I'm so much more picky with my TV now, and I only want to watch things if I think they're amazing.
Yeah.
And I've got very brutal with kind of cutting down the amount of shows I watch now. But yeah, I used to watch all the Hawaii Five-O's and those kind of things. Although saying that, I've still been watching Krypton, and that's...
But that is at least genre, so you know.
That's kind of genre dinner telly.
Yeah,
it's not really an excuse. It's still clearly a teen drama.
Well, some teen dramas are quite good. The other thing that I've been watching is a show called Explained, which is on Netflix. And this is actually the thing I tend to watch when I'm eating. It's because they're 15, 20-minute shows. I think they come out weekly. They take a single subject and cover it for 15, 20 minutes. But the subjects that they're covering are anything from, like Bitcoin, the stock market. They then did one on K-pop. They've done one on designer DNA. I can't remember what else they've done. But so it's just this sort of broad range of random subjects. And they spend 20 minutes just explaining a bit more about it, so you get a kind of broad overview of a particular topic. It's really well put together, though. It's just interviews and background, and they do little animated pieces that go with it. But if you want something that you can just sit and kind of learn something for 20 minutes about a topic you maybe thought you knew a bit about but didn't know that much about or wanted to know more about, Explained is a really good little show for doing that. It's well worth going to watch.
That sounds really good. I do love that kind of thing. There's a YouTube channel I watch that does that sort of thing called Today I Found Out.
Yeah.
And they have entire playlists where you can choose Today I Found Out, and it will political history or unexplained history or science things or, general common knowledge type things. And you can just leave one of their, if I'm doing housework, I leave one of their playlists on and just learn stuff. Like how post-it notes were invented. That's actually a way more exciting and thrilling story than one would imagine.
Yes. No, I know a bit about that.
And
I would never
have known I wanted to know how post-it notes were invented if it hadn't been on Today I Found Out.
No, there are some really interesting stories out there. So, I mean, it's exactly that sort of thing. And it's on Netflix. It's called Explained. They're little 15, 20-minute episodes. Well worth going to listen to and watch if you like that sort of stuff. It's really good. That's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news. We start off the TV and film news this week with our usual renewals, cancellations and pickups. A UK cancellation for once this time, Benidorm. They have finally said the ITV sitcom after 10 seasons is not coming back again, which they sort of leaked out about 6 months ago. And I think he got told off for ITV saying a decision hadn't been made, and now it has. So that's definitely not coming back. Killjoys has got an air date. I put this in because I knew you were on. Killjoys season 4 is coming on the 21st of August at 9 p.m. to Sci-Fi UK.
So good.
Still got to catch up with that series. I've watched a couple of episodes and I get other things get in the way, and I keep having to go back and watch it, like just binge through it, because it's all...
You need to, because it just escalates and it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. The way they evolve it, just it works really well. And I can't wait to see how the hell they're going to wrap this up, because we're now at kind of galaxy size war.
Yeah, so it's season four, which is the penultimate season. They've got one more season after this. So that's coming on the 21st of August at 9 p.m. Mr. Mercedes is on this service called Stars Play, which is an add-on channel for Amazon Prime. So you've got to pay extra for it, but it gets a number of Stars programs. Mr. Mercedes is a show that's been kicking around for a while now. It's David E. Kelly's adaptation of Stephen King's Mr. Mercedes. It stars Brendan Gleeson from 28 Days Later in Bruges and plays Moody in Harry Potter as Bill Hodges, a retired detective who finds himself tortured by a demented serial killer played by Harry Treadaway from Penny Dreadful. With a series of lurid letters and emails, this forces the ex-cop to undertake a private and potentially felonious crusade to bring the killer to justice so he can strike again. And there's a lot of people that were asking about this, and it does look like a really good series. It's got a second season coming very soon, coming on the 23rd of August. Season one is up on Stars Play right now, so season two will come out the day after the US on the 23rd of August. That's definitely, if you like those sort of detective dramas, this sounds like it could be a really interesting one. But like I say, it's on Stars Play, which will cost you a bit more money, unfortunately. But I think they're doing a 7-day trial, so if you want to trial it out, you can go and kind of sign up and then just make sure you cancel it before the end of the 7 days. Burden of Truth has also got a UK air date. This is Kirsten Krug, who's from Smallville and Beauty and the Beast. She is starring in a show called Burden of Truth, where she plays a fast rising corporate attorney who returns to a small hometown to represent a major client against some sick school kids. She wins the case but discovers the girls are sicker than anyone had thought. So this, along with unresolved personal issues, makes her realise she needs to ditch her big city law firm and move home. So it sounds like it's going to be a sort of legal drama, a bit of a fish out of water legal drama. I don't know much about it other than that, but that's coming to Universal on the 14th of August at 9 p.m. And Fear the Walking Dead has sprung up all over the place now. It was announced that E4 have picked up the free-to-air rights, so that will be season one coming, we believe, in early August, although that may change. So Fear the Walking Dead season one is coming to that. Season 4B is on AMC UK from Monday the 13th of August. That's been simulcast with the US at 2 a.m. and then repeated at 9 p.m. And if you want to watch on Amazon Prime, that's got the first three seasons on. Season four will come probably next year, I would imagine. So you're never short of places to watch Fear the Walking Dead now, whether you have a service, whether you have AMC, whether you have Amazon, or whether you have a free-to-air TV box, you can watch Fear the Walking Dead somewhere, at least. Moving on to the bigger news, Netflix has picked up a musical drama called A Mixtape, which apparently was originally piloted at Fox, but they turned it down because Fox really didn't pick up much stuff this year because they've bought a bunch of football to run on Thursday nights, which has taken one of their nights away. The story is that it is a romantic musical drama that looks at love stories connected through a diverse, disparate group of people in contemporary Los Angeles through the music that lives inside their hearts and minds.
It sounds like it's going to be incredibly wonderful and well-loved by most people and hated horribly by me.
Yes, I was going to say, this sounds so up your street, this show.
It's exactly the opposite. I mean, it sounds like a very interesting concept, and, you know, I'm sure, being that it's on Netflix and they tend to pick up stuff that's a little bit more left field and things, that it could be a really interesting and wonderful piece of work. But at the same time, as soon as you said that, my brain went, oh God, no. And then I thought, God, I sound so cynical and horrible. That's terrible. I can think of several people I know that would absolutely love that though, and I shall point them in that direction.
Yes. Stars Madeline Stowe, who was in Revenge of 12 Monkeys, Jenna Dewan Tatum, who was in Supergirl American Horror Story, Callie Hernandez, who was in Alien Covenant and La La Land, Jamil French, who was in Let's Get Physical, Marianne Jean Baptiste, who was in Blind Spot, and Megan Ferguson, who was in Heart of Dixie, Scott Campbell, who was in House of Cards. So, I mean,
there
is some talent in there. The show's come from Joss Safran. Joss Safran is the creator and producer of Quantico, but prior to that, he was also showrunner on the second season of Smash, which I loved because it was a wonderfully silly, over-the-top cap series and highly entertaining. So unfortunately, the first season was actually better than the second season, which is the one that he actually was over. But yeah, so he's got some background in doing musical dramas anyway. We'll see how this goes. Really very much depends whether you like musical dramas or not. I don't know whether it's going to be original music or whether it's going to be covers. So whether it's going to be more Smash-like or Glee-like, I don't know. We'll see. Don't know, have an air date for it yet either, but I'm guessing it will probably be next year if it's starting to cast now. It may come out towards the end of the year, but I'm guessing it's more likely to be next year. Sticking with Netflix, they've got a bit of casting news for the new Ricky Gervais series Afterlife, which has really picked up the cream of British talent for this show. Afterlife, if you haven't heard about it, stars Ricky Gervais as Tony, a man with a perfect life, but then when his wife suddenly dies, he changes. After contemplating taking his own life, he decides instead to live long enough to punish the world by saying and doing whatever he likes from now on. He thinks it's like a superpower, not caring about himself or anything else. Turns out to be tricky when everybody around him is trying to save the nice guy they used to know. So that's the basic setup for it.
That's a very dark setup for a British comedy. I'm actually intrigued by this one.
Yes, I love Ricky Gervais's stuff anyway, and I think this is completely up his street. The cast that they found, though, Doctor Who and Game of Thrones star David Bradley, Downton Abbey and Doctor Who star Penelope Wilton, Ashley Jensen, who was nominated for an Emmy with her work with Gervais on Extras and also starred in Ugly Betty. We've got Tom Baston, who was in Plebs and David Brent Light on the Road, Tony Way, who's in Edge of Tomorrow, David Earle from Cemetery Junction and Derek, Joe Wilkinson, who was in Him and Her. There's also a bunch of other people from Life on the Road as well, the David Brent movies. I think this sounds like a fascinating idea for a TV show.
Yeah, it sounds sort of like a super dark British version of Yes Man, if you know that. Which was also a film with Jim Carrey, a surprisingly good film, actually, which the trailer did no justice to. And obviously, Yes Man is the story of someone who just decides to start saying yes to everything, and it leads them down quite a path of self-discovery and not at all where they thought they would go. And it's quite a bittersweet comedy, but not. This sounds like the super dark, dry British version of that.
Yes Man's based on a book by Danny Wallace, where he actually did it in real life, isn't it? Danny Wallace being the sidekick to Dave Gorman, or originally, before he sort of set out on his own. I thought that was a brilliant idea as well. But it's going to be directed and star Gervais, who's also exec producing, obviously. He's joined by Charlie Hanson, who worked with Gervais on Extras, and Derek. It's going to be 6 30-minute episodes, so it's the usual sort of short run that Gervais tends to do with this sort of stuff. I'm really intrigued by that. We don't have a date when it's actually going to land, but the very earliest you're going to see it at the end of the year. It may possibly even be next year. One to look out for, I think. It's called Afterlife. And lastly, because I'm sure you're a huge fan of this band, I put this story in for you. Take That's Howard Donald is presenting a car show for Channel 4 called Mission Ignition, which may seem
wasn't
like...
he mostly doing music production until now?
I don't know. I know he'd done some DJing and stuff, I think. But apparently...
I thought he was running a production company or something, doing music stuff.
You clearly know more about Take That than I do. So
I have a relative that was obsessed with Take That.
Yeah, okay, we believe you. Not to knock your street cred at all. Sometimes presenter casting does seem like a bit left of field, and at first glance this does seem that way. However, Howard Donald, if you don't know the man particularly well, he is actually a classic car collector and an amateur racing driver, so this does make a bit more sense than it originally sounded. He's not presenting it on his own, he's with Dario Fancinelli, who is a racing driver. He's like 3 times Indy 500 champion, 4 times IndyCar Series champion. So there's a guy that knows what he's doing. The basic premise of the show is two classic cars will be up for grabs. Well, one will be up for grabs for the winner. Basically, you have two teams, and what they do is they completely dismantle the cars and basically turn them into giant jigsaw puzzles. And then Fratelli and Donald and their teams battle it out to put the cars back together, and the first one to rebuild it gets to keep it. That's essentially
I'm not
the
sure
idea.
If that's brilliant or a complete and utter travesty, because the idea of taking apart a beautiful classic car and it might not going back together correctly or might be getting damaged makes me very, very sad.
Yes, but-
Can they not be putting back together replica classic cars so I'd feel slightly better? Or did they scratch something?
Yeah, I mean, that is slightly concerning. I mean, unless they were cars that were sort of already in bits when they got them or, you know, needed to be taken apart.
Yeah, if it was renovating and retrofitting one that was a wreck. But the idea that they might be taking apart ones that are very, very nice,
yes,
makes me kind of sad.
Yeah,
so I don't know if I like this idea or not.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's not that. I'm hoping it is cars that needed to be taken apart before they put them back together, because I can't imagine if you own one of those classic cars you're going to allow them to take it apart and put it back together. So I'm assuming that they are cars that needed this to happen. We'll see exactly what they're actually going to be doing with it when it comes along. There's no air date for Mission Ignition yet, but keep an eye out for it. It'll be on Channel 4 apparently. Kind of reminds me of the old Scrap Heap Challenge idea, but done with classic cars. And I used to quite like Scrap Heap
Challenge. I like the Scrap Heap Challenge angle, but then I need to be reassured these aren't perfectly working restored classic cars being turned into jigsaws. Yes. Otherwise I might cry.
Yeah, because that does seem very wrong. I'm hoping that that's not the case, but we'll see. So that's the news out the way. Let's move on to the interview.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The interview this week is with This Is Us composer Siddhartha Khosla. Siddhartha's music weaves together the vignettes of a family's past and present. In addition to working on that show, he's also got his critically acclaimed band Goldspot, whose album Aerogram topped the Los Angeles Times Pop Music Editor's year-end best album lists in 2017, earning them a number one album of the year. He also scores E-Network's The Royals, starring Elizabeth Hurley, and is the man behind the music for Marvel's Runaways as well. Should point out at this point, the interview that we're actually doing here is mainly about This Is Us. The reason we're not talking about Runaways is because I sat on this interview until This Is Us actually launched in the UK, and we thought that was going to be January, and then it wasn't, and then it got knocked back and knocked back and knocked back, and it's only just started airing now. So this interview was actually done back in September last year, which was prior to Runaways coming out on either side of the Atlantic, so we couldn't really talk much about it then. So I'm going to try and get him back on at some point so we could talk a bit more about the Runaways rather than This Is Us. But this is mainly about This Is Us. In the interview, we chat about composing the soulful sound for it. We cover how he describes himself as an Indian guy from Jersey, created a powerful and Billboard chart-topping Memphis-sounding soul ballad, We Can Always Come Back to This, for Williams Band in the heart-wrenching episode Memphis in season one. So we cover all that stuff. He was a lovely, lovely guy to talk to. It's a really fascinating interview. Here's the interview with Siddhartha Khosla. We'll see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV. Hello.
Hi, David. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Good, good. Thank you for coming on. It's lovely to talk to you. Should we start off a little bit by getting a bit of background? How sure. did you get into composing in the first place?
Well, I started my career as a singer-songwriter for the band Goldspot. And I started Goldspot right after college, and it was basically my life for 15 years or so in my career. And I still do it, not as often as I like. But, but you know, I think that was kind of my education in writing and composing music as much as it was the reason why I'm doing it as well.
Right.
And, you know, my band, you know, would get a lot of airplay here and around the country on radio stations. And, and you know, kind of like the NPR kind of world is where that music has lived, you know.
Right.
Which is cool, which is where I always wanted it to be, you know. And then I moved to London for the release of my my first record. And it was on Mercury out there. And after that record came out, you know, the music industry kind of, you know, started around that time, music industry started shifting to this kind of very heavy streaming model. And the goalposts just moved, you know, and everything just changed and things had to be approached differently. And so I kept on touring and performing and making records. And then ultimately, after my record came out, I'd been touring and then moved back to the U.S. and released a couple albums independently. And then I got a phone call from Dan Fogelman, who's a good friend of mine, and we both kind of started our careers together, in Los Angeles. And yeah. He started as a writer and I as a musician, and we never really worked together before, but he'd become this really, well-known prolific writer by that point. And he'd written Cars and Crazy Stupid Love, and Crazy Stupid Love came a little out right after, but he'd written a bunch of stuff, and he called me and he said, look, I have this television show called The Neighbors for ABC, and we're going into our second season, and we're looking for a composer. Will you come on board and do this? And I'd never really thought about scoring TV before. I always wanted to do film and eventually do some film, and I didn't think much about television at that time. And he kind of introduced me to that world, and I took that job. And, not knowing anything about what I was doing and literally just was kind of thrown into the fire of a network television show and delivering an album's worth of music a week for this show. And it taught me so much. And I'm forever grateful for that opportunity from Dan. And that led to just so much of the work for me. I got hired on The Royals to score their drama. That was my first drama I got. And another television show, and then other pilots. And then, so it just slowly started happening for me. And then, This Is Us came into my life last season. So, yeah. It's been a really, really wonderful. And I've done a couple movies as well the last year. So I think all those years as a singer-songwriter in my band really helped me immensely, because a lot of people like Dan, for example, and other music supervisors and creators of shows, some of them are familiar with my music and they like what I do naturally sometimes. And I think that helps me a lot and has introduced people to what I do.
Talk about trial by fire, going from being the singer-songwriter in a band where you've kind of got your own schedule to write and organize your own music, to a network TV show which has the most insane shilling known to man. That must have been nuts. How was the transition from one to the other?
There's a lot of sleepless nights and a lot of sweat. I just remember initially being so nervous because I knew I could pull off the music. That I did not have concerns about. Knew I could pull it off. It was just learning a new system altogether. I was so used to kind of making, as you're saying, making albums, like taking 2-3 years sometimes to make an album. And the beauty of making an album and having the luxury of having that time allows you to really make things that are unique and special when you're making albums, and make things that other people aren't doing, allows you to spend half a day trying to find the perfect sound on a drum set, when you're making an album. Of like, we'd spend half a day finding the right velvet drape to hang over to have sitting all across our drums so we can get the perfect dead sound of the drums. And those types of things are the things that make albums great, I think, and I think my fear was, how can I continue to make music that I think is worthy and great on such a compressed schedule, and also without succumbing to kind of like making schlocky television music? And I think that was my fear, because I'm a purist about the way I make my music, and so that was a challenge. But I think it just ended up being, like, as I said, just like a little less sleep, and ultimately devoting the time I needed to make things feel right, for me. And I still do that to this day. I'm a purist about how I record any of my scores, and I don't rely on MIDI as much as I can, and or these virtual instruments. So I really focus on trying to keep my instrumentation as pure and organic as possible.
Coming on to some of the TV shows you've worked on, Grandfathered, Royals, but obviously This Is Us is the big thing, and Runaways as well. But I mean, This Is Us is the thing. It was one of those shows that I kind of saw when it came out, and I saw the kind of trailers and stuff for it, and I thought, I'm not sure whether this is for me, Then it came onto Channel 4. I watched it. I'm just totally hooked from that first episode.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you. Great.
Just a phenomenal show. And your music in it just so feels like part of it. It's so beautifully woven into it.
Thank you so much.
You got the gig because of Dan, I'm assuming.
The specifics on getting the gig were, you know, that was a tough one because there were many people kind of like, I think there were, I mean, I didn't really know who else was kind of like, this was a big one to get, I remember. Yeah. And so they had to, like, I know Dan wanted me to do it. And we had and we had these two amazing, we have great directors on the show, from Ken Olin to Glenn Ficarra and John Requa, who come from, those two guys, last two guys come from the film world. So they were all, everyone was kind of involved in this decision and needed to be the right sound.
Yeah.
And I remember Dan sending me a script and they had already shot the pilot. I had not seen any footage.
Right.
And he said, will you read the script and just write something and send it to us? And so I really, I mean, despite the relationship with him, you know, it was such an important show for him. It was his biggest show, you know, yeah. Potentially. And so they needed to ultimately find the right person to do it. And I had written a piece of music that, like a 6-minute piece of score after reading the pilot episode, just read it. And it was the right sound for the show. Immediately they heard it. They were like, it's great. It's perfect. This is our show, you know?
Yeah.
So that was really special and really cool. So yeah, in this world of getting work for television and film, I think what helps is that people have to trust that you can do it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, they have to, I think there's a confidence that people get when they know you've done it before. It's different than an actor, I think, you know? Like, I think when you're working in my side of the work, like the composer side, which is really down to like being artistically strong, but also having to deliver on a tight schedule. Having to do those two things are so important to getting work on these shows. And so I'd also done it before on The Royals, you know? So I'd been through as a drama, you know, that's a 1-hour drama.
Yeah.
With a ton of music, you know, having to deliver half an hour worth of score every week, you know, basically. So I think the combination of all that helped. And then yes, obviously Dan trusted me and he knew what I was capable of. And he also wanted me to bring my own kind of artistic vision to the project.
The music is really interesting for this show because it's, you know, with a lot of shows, you've got kind of big orchestration and that sort of stuff. This is almost completely the opposite end of that because it's sort of guitars, piano, some vocalization, few strings, you know, it seems to be very stripped back and simple, but mixes in with just the whole feel and the emotion of the show. I think brilliant.
Thank you.
Was there a sort of brief to it, or how did you sort of go about approaching it?
When I read that script initially, I just kind of went with my gut, and my gut was saying there's such an emotional honesty about this show. There's something very raw and vulnerable about every piece of it, the writing, and I know Dan's personality as well. You know, the ultimate goal is to achieve something that is emotionally honest and that's authentic and genuine. And I think that spoke to me, and knowing that this was a show that was going to exist in multiple eras, and time periods, I needed to find something that was timeless. So there could be nothing trendy about the sound.
Yeah.
And so it's not something I needed to be able to live in the 60s, and it needed to live today. You know, it just needed to live in so many decades. And we also needed the ability to go back further and to go forward further if we ever needed to, because I'm not saying that's where we're going to go, but you never know. You know, it's just once you have a show like this, that's basic premise is that we are the product of something that preceded us, and something down the line will be the product of something that follows us. Is this as just a guiding principle, you're going to have to be able to find a musical sound that can live forever, you know? And so, you know, I just kind of picked up my acoustic guitar while reading that script and just started playing. I tune it in like these kind of very like odd tunings. And so I kept it very organic and simple. And then when I saw a picture, it confirmed it, because, you know, I got the first episode without any score. And the instruction was, directive was just go write, just write, you know, and, you know, don't write to specific scenes, just write, see it and write and see what it, and it kept on reinforcing the organic sound, which is the right way to go. And I think it's because there's also so much emotion in the directing and acting and writing. The performances are so so strong. And I had to play balancing act a little bit. And I didn't, there was already enough emotion that I could not create something that would be overwrought with emotion either. Like I didn't want to do anything that was sweeping and orchestral, because it would have been A, the more obvious approach, and B, it might have turned the show into something it wasn't.
Yeah.
It would have leaned into a rom-com thing, which it's not. Mm. The show is like a mini film. And so it deserved, and it felt like an indie film on some level on network television. It deserved kind of that treatment. And so the score is basically me on my wooden desk. All the percussion you hear is me basically tapping my fingers like, you know, on my wooden desk and playing the acoustic guitar and humming along, and it's all done within like 5 feet of my chair.
So, I mean, the process now, obviously you did that first one to the script and then went back and did to picture. Are you doing it all to picture now?
Yeah, it's all to picture right now. I mean, at this point, you know, I do read scripts occasionally, but the schedule is just so crazy that I'm literally like working on 3 different episodes at the same time on this, of This Is Us, going back and forth, you know, because so it's just constantly working to picture. There's 2 different ways I basically write for the show. I will write to specific scenes, but that comes second. The first thing I do is I watch an episode and I just shut it off. I watch it and I just turn it off and I just start writing, because I want each episode to feel like a little mini movie. And so there's kind of one thematic thread that goes through each episode. And I like to find one theme, one central theme that is kind of like the universal theme that ties in our characters for that episode. And then I go and weave that in and out of the episode, then around the picture.
That's kind of interesting to do it that way, because quite often you have themes that are attached to certain characters or whereas with this show, you're almost treating them like completely individual different entities, which sort of makes sense with each episode being so different.
Right. It also depends on the show. It's not always the formula, you know, like every show different. For this show, I started off writing character-centric themes.
Right.
So I had like a Toby and Kate theme for their relationship early in last season. And it was this very romantic Joni Mitchell-esque kind of sound. The only way to describe it would be like if Joni Mitchell was scoring the show. Yeah. And, you know, but Joni Mitchell of the 60s scoring it, you know. And so there was that feeling to it. But then eventually I started thinking big picture, you know, and I thought it was more interesting to start scoring the larger picture of everything. And that was something I kind of learned from Dan's writing and also from Glenn and John, who directed the pilot and directed a bunch of episodes last year. And I worked closely with them, and they had one of them said to me once that they love when score is not necessarily scoring what's happening in the scene, but scoring why things are happening in the scene. And I think that kind of opened up a whole world for me.
Yeah.
And it's a really interesting and fun and challenging way to score, because it forces you as a composer to kind of to like not think of yourself as just like the composer of the show, but like you're just almost like another character in a way, you know. Mm. And you have to respond to what's happening in the scene, not because of exactly what's happening, but how that's impacting your character too. So I think that's such a fascinating way for me to think. It just opened a whole world for me. I think one of them, Glenn or John, said it, and I love that idea. You know, that's how I score the show now. And I take it a whole other level. I also know Dan Fogelman, and I know we have a friendship from college. You know, he was my college roommate. And so you don't create a show like this out of thin air.
No.
You know, it comes from someplace in your soul, and it comes from his soul. And so I know why these characters are even there in the first place, or at least I think I do. Yeah. And I think that gives me a window that I would normally never have access to. And it's really cool, because I feel like, you know, sometimes I'm scoring a scene for my friend as much as I am for the show.
Yeah, well, I think that comes across, because it's just seems so perfect for the show.
Thank you.
One of the other things you did for the series, for this series as well, was you wrote an original song, although I don't think anybody watching the episode where the original song would appear would realize it's an original song, because it sounds so authentic.
Yeah, that's the best compliment you could have ever given me.
it was the episode where the characters are in Memphis and the father's dying, and so do you want to just explain how that came about?
Yeah, this is in This Is Us fashion, Dan had written this standalone episode where none of the characters in the show appear except for two.
Yeah,
it's basically, I mean, you early on you see a little bit, but this was the Memphis episode, and this was the episode where William, who's dying of cancer, takes his son Randall on a road trip to Memphis in his final days. And he wants to show him where he came from. And the whole episode is just a series of flashbacks about William's life.
Yeah.
And you see William as a baby, and you see William's journey as a musician in his youth, in his 20s. And it's a really powerful episode. And this was a moment where I had to actually read the script before, and I had to write music before I even saw a picture, because, they needed to film to the song.
Right. Yes.
And so there was a scene that Dan had scripted in. The scene took place, it was in the 70s, we're in Memphis, and this is a flashback to William, who's a B3 organ player in his blues cover band with his cousin Ricky. And in the script, it had scripted, and there were no lyrics written out, but it was just scripted that there were lyrics to a song that William gives to Ricky and says, "Hey, I've been writing, what do you think of this?" And in that episode too, in that flashback, young William is also coping with his mother dying of cancer as well. And so this song was something that was coming from William's soul, and that was kind of what was scripted. And also what was scripted was that this song was, the band starts jamming on this song and Ricky starts singing it. And next thing you know, the crowds get bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm. And this is their hit.
Yeah.
And so then my job was to come up with the song. And I remember talking to Glenn and John and Dan. Glenn and John, they felt like we should approach this like this would be like a Stax Records song.
Yeah.
Something that would have been like a, who knows, like an Otis Redding B-side or something, or just something that could have lived. It could have been a soul song from the 70s in Memphis.
Yeah.
And that was the most challenging thing I think I've had to do to date in my career for a number of reasons. There was just this episode on some level, hinged on this song. The song, and the song could not be anything less. It had to be, we had to sell it like it was a great song from that era. I had never written a soul song in my life, but I'm a songwriter first. And I just started, and I love that music. I love that era. And I was just listening. And I think what I learned from my research was, at the end of the day, these are just simple songs with simple melodies and lyrics that are oftentimes conversational. And so I had come up with this idea, and in my head, I kept on, returning to this idea of the lyrical idea was, we can always come back to this. And it was this idea that it was a larger picture of the show, that people die, but it doesn't mean that they're forgotten. And it doesn't mean that they can't still live with us in our memory of them or through our memory of them. And we can always go back to things. And that was this idea. And the other idea, thinking more on a spiritual level, I grew up as a Hindu, though I'm not particularly religious, but I grew up with this idea that we reincarnate. There's an idea of we really literally can come back to this at some other point, and we can do this again. And so I think that was kind of the guiding principle for me. And so I had written this kind of draft of this song, and I'd gotten pretty far, but it was missing something. And so I called a good friend of mine who's a singer songwriter, and he's a great singer. And I called him, and he helped me finish the song. And then we just kind of turned it in to the producers, and Dan and Glenn and John, and everyone was just, they were like, this is our song. and the key was making it authentic.
Yeah.
And part was like, okay, we got the song, authentic. Brian Tyree Henry sang his ass off on that song. He didn't even know that he could sing something like that. I don't think he knew. But the song moved him because it made him think of his mom that he lost recently. And he just came in, and he was just, there was something so visceral about his performance. And we recorded the music for that song live in a room.
Oh, wow.
And in a studio, you know, using like great vintage gear. I wanted to make sure this sounded like it came out in the 70s.
Yeah.
And our engineer was terrific. And I think all those things together created something special.
Yeah.
And I've had people say to me, you know, I've had friends of mine who I called before the episode and I said, hey, make sure you watch that episode tomorrow night because, you know, our song is in there and I want to know what you think. Episode is over. I get the phone call and they're like, where was your song? I didn't see it. And I said, no, it was the scene where the band is performing the song. And the consensus across the board is, oh, I thought that actually was the song from that time.
Yeah.
I had no idea. And that was, again, that was like, that confirmed that we'd done our job well. And then the song proceeded to kind of, then it became this like hit song. It was crazy because it was in the Billboard charts. And it was just like, I'd never had a song in my 15-year career in the Billboard charts in my own band. And it was just, and now all of a sudden an Indian guy from Jersey has a soul song in the charts. Only on a show like This Is Us could that happen. Anyway, it was crazy. Really special and the career highlight that I can't imagine. Like, I don't know how I could ever, I hope I can be able to do something like that again.
Yeah, yeah. I thought you did a phenomenal job with that. Has the music changed much for the second season?
It's all still that same quintessential sound. The couple of things have changed. You're going to see kind of like a more heartbreaking, I mean, we are delving deeper into these characters now. And so there is a, you know, I have this $25 or something, maybe it's this really, really crappy, but soulful guitar that I bought in an antique store in Vermont. Got a massive crack on the back of it. Nobody in their right mind would call it even like a usable instrument. Yeah. I'm using that. That's my Jack guitar for this season.
Right.
And it's broken. And so is he.
Yeah. I was going to say, it seems appropriate that.
Appropriate. And you know what? It may be the kind of thing that only I feel.
Yeah.
And someone might hear it be like, oh, that just sounds like a piece of guitar. But to me, it just puts me in his headspace a little bit and it helps me.
Yeah. I believe you've got Sylvester Stallone guest starring in the second season as well. And I have to say, if it was me, it's probably a good job I'm not a composer. If it was me, the temptation to sneak a bit of the Rocky theme in there.
Yeah, right. That would be fun. That would give, exactly that. I think we'd have to go through some clearances to do that. But yeah, of course, there's no question. I actually just finished working on some of his scenes last week, and he is unbelievable in those scenes. He's such a grab, and he's just such a legend, and he's such a great actor. And honestly, I was like one of the most, I was kind of starstruck. I didn't even meet him, but I was starstruck working on his scene. You know, it was one of the moments where I was like, this is cool. I'm scoring, you know, Sylvester Stallone right now. This, you know, so it was really special.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome. I should just wrap up with our usual two final questions. So first one is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
If I have any time, I will be watching like Seinfeld at 1 o'clock in the morning. And that's it. Seinfeld or Curb Your Enthusiasm are kind of my go-to. And if I have time to watch anything, I just don't have, frankly, the time to watch anything, right? Because I also spend so much time in front of a screen.
Yeah.
I think it's probably unhealthy for me at this point to watch it more, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. And if you had the opportunity to work on any show, past, present, or future, not a show that you've worked on, which one would it be?
Twin Peaks.
I kind of, having heard some of your other interviews and read about you, I'm not entirely unsurprised that that's what you picked.
Yeah, no question. I would love to. I mean, the thing is, I don't know why I would work on it because I would want to work. Actually, I'd like to be Angelo Badalamenti's assistant on the original Twin Peaks. I'm worthy enough to even say that I would love to have scored that show.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anybody could ever achieve what Angela Badalamenti achieved on that score. To me, it was just the most, and that's a big influence for me, that score. I think conceptually, this idea of just creating stuff, and for This Is Us, that show inspires me, This Is Us.
Yeah.
Even a different sonic palette, but it's just, it's this idea that, like, it's just how a piece of music can be, you know, so heartbreaking and haunting at the same time and so emotive, you know, that's just like, and that score was just incredible. My favorite TV score to date, of all time. And yeah, so my dream, I think if I could do anything, I would be his assistant on the original Twin Peaks.
Good call, I think.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I shall let you get back to your morning, but it's been awesome talking to you. Thanks for spending a little bit of time just talking to your stuff.
Well, thank you so much, David. I can hear the passion in your voice about what you do. What you do, it's palpable. So I appreciate being able to witness that as well. So
thanks. Awesome.
Thanks so much. Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that was the interview with Siddhartha Kozler. You can find season 2 of This Is Us on More4. It's jumped from Channel 4 to More4. Well worth going to watch. It's a really good show. Let's move on to some highlights for next week on TV. So, highlights for next week. We have a number of shows, new shows arriving, actually, and one show airing for the first time on free-to-air TV. So those of you without Netflix subscriptions will be very happy about this. Suits, Season 7, the brilliant and wonderful Suits. Season 7 coming through to a free-to-air channel for the first time. That's on the 10th of July at 9 p.m. to the Paramount Network. Season 8 of Suits actually starts on Netflix next week or the week after, I think. So we've got those coming up. Picnic at Hanging Rock, which comes to BBC Two on the 11th of July at 9:05. That's the show with Natalie Dormer starring, based on a novel about a bunch of school kids that go missing. It's based in Australia, I think, that. So that looks quite interesting. We've got Unforgotten, which season 3 of that coming to ITV on the 15th of July at 9 p.m. That stars Nicola Walker in the murder mystery drama. We've got Ransom, season 2 of that coming to Universal. That's on the 16th of July at 9 p.m. Harrow, which is this new show coming to Alibi on the 17th of July at 9 p.m. That stars Ewan Crawford as Daniel Harrow, a brilliant, unorthodox and mysterious doctor with total disregard for authority and unfailing empathy for the dead, help him solve the most bizarre cases. Could be interesting if you're into murder mystery things. And Nightfall, season 1 of that finally comes to the UK. That's on the History Channel on the 17th of July at 9 p.m. This is the drama about the Knights Templar, stars Tom Cullen. That seems to have had quite a lot of interest, so one I'm definitely looking forward to seeing, I think. Could be quite intriguing. And that's it for this week, unless you've got anything else you want to put in?
No, I think we've covered quite a few things. I need to go back to trying to protect my feet, elbows, cables, headphones, mobile phone, keyboard and everything else from this adorable little kitten that is still causing absolute havoc around me. Any noises heard in the background of this podcast are things being destroyed by said kitten and not somebody having some kind of horrible fight in the background. So yeah, I need to be doing that, possibly get back out into the sunshine as well.
Yes.
If people want to see any of the indie comic and indie game interviews and things I have mentioned, some of my stuff is up on the geekdown.co.uk website. You can also find me under Trista Bytes, Bytes spelt like computer bytes because I'm doubly geeky, on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. And yeah, I shall obviously come back and report back after Hyper Japan and London Film and Comic Con, and we can compare notes.
Yes, that would be good. For us, if you want to go to geektown.co.uk throughout the week, you can see all the latest air date info. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk, leave a message on the website post, find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Their meditations range to fit your needs each day, from anxiety and stress, relaxation and focus, to building habits and taking care of your physical well-being. They even have expert-led talks on topics such as tips for overcoming stress and anxiety, handling grief, improving self-esteem, caring for relationships, and more. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.